Okay. Hi, everybody. Thank you very much for being here. My name is Gisela. I am from a Latin American NGO called Derechos Digitales. And I will be speaking about the right to identity, how it's recognized in Latin America, and how I believe it should be opposable to search engines, algorithms. Especially, let me start with a little bit of a telenovela drama over here, because I don't think I can escape that, can I? So this girl's name is Emma. That's actually a fake name, but she kissed a guy during her bachelorette party at a beach club in Cancun. Another man thought this was a disgrace, so he filmed her, uploaded it to Snapchat. Eventually, the video ended up in YouTube. It became viral. And now when you Google her name and last name, over 200 press notes just pop in, linking her to an infidelity because she was also wearing a fake wedding veil. So it was apparent to everybody that she was being unfaithful. Of course, most lawyers should say she can make a right to reply and just have this rectified over a period of time. It's been 3 years. She cannot move on. So my question right now is, can we, from the right to identity, question what search engines algorithms are telling us? And, well, this discussion has become very popular. So I will talk about four things super briefly so then we can get some interaction more in a workshop format. How search algorithms work super quickly. The right to be forgotten. Everybody knows about it. We've talked about it too much. So I'll just, say a general comment on that. What the historical memory argument has been in Latin America with all the dictatorships, the post-dictatorship era, and how the historical memory is actually an argument against the right to be forgotten. And finally, the right to identity. Rather than concentrating on the right to be forgotten, I acknowledge the criticisms, I acknowledge the censorship. I'd rather not talk about this because I think we talked about it too much, but rather on an actual right to identity, and if we can question this, from the perspective of delisting, which I will briefly define as well. So when I was looking and researching how the search engine really works, it's an intricate deep learning algorithm that it is protected by intellectual property rights. So everything we know is actually just published by Google, and it's actually not even updated. So what I did is I edited a Google video. I'm sorry. I hope Google doesn't sue me. I don't think they will. It should be on Creative Commons, but it's not. So it is this. Let me just play it. So yeah, you can check it out there. There's Matt, an expert nerd that is going to explain to us. So there's essentially two processes that are important, indexing and prioritizing. Indexing starts with software programs called spiders. So what the spiders actually do is that they crawl the web, they fetch the first pages, and then the links they point to, and the links they in turn point to, and so on, and so on, and so on, until they have a full repository, that's how they call it, of the web, or at least what they can do about it. Think about a database, a map. This is essentially, well, then they categorize all this information and store it in their database. And this is essentially what they call the index. This is super important when talking about the right to be forgotten. And I think in the policy discussions, it has just been overridden. So when we look for something, when we search for something in Google, we're actually searching this index. It's not the entire web. And this is super relevant because then prioritizing comes in. What comes first and what comes last? Google actually, to search through all the database and give us the results that are relevant, think about it, it could be thousands of web pages that actually have our search queries. So Google's secret is to actually show you the most relevant ones. The most relevant ones. How do they do this? First, they start with word counts. So they specifically search how many times are actually the words your search query on each web page. And then they also rank pages according to their importance. Let's say how many links point to that page or their reputable sources. And I'm actually quoting a Google engineer here, the New York Times and CNNs of the world. Who programs that? Somebody has to tell the algorithm what the most reputable sources are. Does the algorithm learn it by itself? What's really going on here? We don't know for sure. The thing is that what actually pops in first is super important because Yeah, so here is the initial PageRank algorithm, patented algorithm that was published by Lawrence Page and Sergey Brin in the 90s. It has changed a lot. Now they also do personalization, hashtag filter bubble, geolocation, language, what you're interested in, what you're not interested in, right? So this is super important because 97%, 91% of the clicks go to the first page. Think about it. Who would actually go to a Japanese restaurant that is featured on page 10? Nobody. So these search engines actually affect our perception of the world and more our own decisions. So I'm just wondering, should we be allowed to question them or not? Right? Thinking about the right to be forgotten. I'm sorry, I'm tripping over piñata here. It was weird. Well, I found it weird. It was a weird German ritual in a piñata, which was interesting because I'm Mexican. So, of course, I am oversimplifying here. This is one of the charts that Lawrence Page and Sergey originally published. But bear with me, there's not a lot of public information on this. So there's also programming bias and cultural bias within these algorithms. I'm not going to talk about that. But let's talk a bit about caramelized onions. How to caramelize onions? 5 minutes, said Google, and an angry amateur chef that always ended with raw onions wrote a piece on Slate saying how the Google algorithm was actually lying. What happened is that he wrote this quoting the New York Times, and the algorithm automatically assumed that the New York Times was right. So they took the quote from the New York Times that this guy was writing against and portrayed it as truth. And they do this in rich text snippets, so it's not only the prioritizing, but they actually have these big boxes that when you Google something, it comes on top or at the right, that it just looks more true than everything else. If you just look at this, I believe that. Well, why wouldn't I believe it if Google says 5 minutes? It actually takes 45. The guy was super angry. And I know this might be a silly example, but I'm actually just trying to say something that is also not new, but algorithms make mistakes. My question is, if these algorithms make mistakes, can they violate our human right to identity, and how would we be able to question that? And then I get to the boring right to be forgotten. It's gotten a really bad reputation, especially because of its name. But it's, as I will explain shortly, it's not even about forgetting. But everybody just says forgetting equals censorship. And I mean, not everybody, but usually free speech activists that usually come from the United States, which this very First Amendment and market perspective on speech. So the right to be forgotten very quickly comes from the first precedent is a case about Mario Costeja, which was a Spanish citizen that sued Google. Because whenever people Googled him, there were two ads about an embargo of Social Security debts that he didn't pay. It was not even news content. They were ads. He had paid them 12 years ago, so he thought these things were not even relevant anymore. And eventually, the Court of Justice of the European Union said he was right and ordered the biggest search engine in the world to remove from the search results all the links that were related to Mr. Costeja. So, as I was saying, this is not even about forgetting things. Things are not erased from the source, and I like to call it delinking. Let me put an example. It is given a certain search query, say a name, you will not show, you tell the search result, the search engine, to not show A, B, or C hyperlinks. So I'll just take myself as an example because I didn't want to mess with people's privacy. When I was younger, I used to protest naked. So if you Google me, you'll find me protesting naked, right? So my name is linked, as I saw, as I explained in this and the indexing and crawling process, it's linked through to images and web pages of me protesting naked. Of course, I'm over that. Of course, I would love to not be perpetually naked on the internet. What search engines do is that they make public information even more publicly available to people, and they link it to our names in a way that it was not done before with just paper journalism. We have a saying in Mexican that is that today's paper is going to clean up your dog shit tomorrow. That doesn't happen online anymore, does it? So essentially, I like to call it delinking rather than right to be forgotten, because what you do is you just tell Google to please just erase the link between your name and these things if it violates your right to identity, which for me makes total sense. I really don't know what all the fuss is about, but if you change the search query, say if you look for Gisela naked, then you will get the same search results. So it's not even about the indexing either. You're not erasing anything from the index either. So a discussion that for me is very interesting is why were Mr. Costeja's debts featured so prominently? Why were they so higher up in the algorithm? And why are we not talking about this? I feel that I'm from civil society. I feel that we're being Google's useful idiots, just acquiring what Google wants, because no Silicon Valley company wants a right to be born against them, right? So in Latin America, this has been a big mess because the word forgotten echoes with the post-dictatorship situation, the post-dictatorship context, where in order to become democratic, a lot of governments, especially because of the military conflicts in Central America and the dictatorships in the southern cone, destroyed archives, erased official documents that portrayed grave human rights violations, dictated amnesty laws that just forgave the perpetrators. So this left a situation of impunity, and the word oblivion comes to mind always within these processes. So the argument of a lot of people is the right to be forgotten will put us further into oblivion, not respecting the process of historical memory in Latin American democracies. For this, I say, let's decolonize our own minds. Google is not the historical memory. Google is not history. It's not even the entire internet. It's just an index of it, right? And then historical memory has to do with oral memory. It has to do with a deep and complex societal portrayal of history and giving voice to people that are no longer on official history records. So why are we outsourcing that to a Silicon Valley company with a certain mindset? That just confuses me. And then, of course, I understand the underlying argument of this is when certain power structures take control over narratives and change our perception of the past or even the present. But if Google is a monopoly, and I'm not saying this, this is Robert McChesney, he actually wrote an entire book on this, it controls around 87% of the search engine market around the world. So why are we not worried when Google, for example, either deliberately or algorithmically stops indexing something? What would that happen? Or there was actually a precedent in China where it didn't portray the massacre of the Tiananmen repression in 1989. We don't even know this happens. So why are we not questioning this? Why are we not questioning the algorithm itself? We just assume it's true. It has to do with what the philosopher Yuval Noah Harari is calling dataism. Think about it. You're using Waze, and Waze tells you turn left, and you know you have to turn right, but you probably know Waze is more right than your own intuition and your own mind, right? So we're just growing up like that. For me, it's very worrying. So finally, the right to identity. And it's very interesting because in Latin America, it has been recognized in the context of the forced disappearance of children in military conflicts in Central America and the dictatorships in the Southern Cone. In the Southern Cone, that's Brazil, Chile, Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay. It's these three cases, but essentially it's very interesting because it's been recognized in forced disappearance of children. And also it links to name, nationality, and family relationships. But then the court did this beautiful thing. It just said, this is the right to identity, the attributes and characteristics that allow for our individualization in society. So for me as a geeky lawyer, this is great because then I can use this against algorithms. It's so open though that it's still a little bit dangerous. So part of my work and my recent research has been actually to define what the right to identity can be, making an analysis of Latin American legislation. It is not privacy, because privacy means protecting your personal intimate information from not being public. Identity is taking control of the public information that is already available in society. And I think this is a super interesting right, because then we can use it for profiling. We can use it for the back-end data that these companies are collecting on us. It's not really about privacy anymore. I think we already lost that battle. What are we going to quit Facebook and Google? Come on, I use Google Maps. I get lost in an elevator. I can't. I live in a city of 25 million people. I honestly don't know how to do it without Google Maps. But then what is the next step? What are we going to think about? So basically also identity, I'm starting to really like this, right? Because it has to do with our autonomy. It has to do with our dignity. It has to do with our ability as human beings to have desires, which is certainly what differentiates us from animals. We're both autonomous, but we have desires. We change our personality. So this second characteristic is essentially personality rights. How can we be different from what we are, and especially the right to be different from oneself? The definition of stigmatization is confining an individual to their past actions, and not, even though they are no longer in that place anymore. And going back to my own example, and this is where it all started, why is me protesting naked when I'm younger more important than my law degree, the research I've made, the articles I've written, the pictures I've took for whatever, or X or Y or C? Why is this more important? And why am I not allowed to question it? So our proposal in Derechos Digitales was to come up with a public policy perspective for Latin American governments, because of course I do get, this has to be made by a judge. We don't want Google to have more power. Judges are idiots as well, especially in Latin America. I'm sorry I'm saying this, I probably shouldn't. But at least they're a bit more accountable, and at least we can appeal their decisions and have more transparency about it. So we made this. I don't think you can see it very well, but it's also, it's a work in progress. It's our beautiful designer that she's always getting our crazy ideas. So there's cases that almost always should be delisted, and cases that should never be subjected to be delisted. Nothing is a priori, right? Everything has to be balanced along with a lot of other rights. We all know that, whatever. So never to be delisted, persons involved in human rights violations. I'm not saying delist public records or judicial records. Just delink that person's name to a certain situation that has to do with this chart. So never, ever, ever persons involved in human rights violations. Always, always, always child exploitation and abuse. We all agree there, right? On the next one, persons convicted for sexual or violent crimes. Never to be delisted. Always delisted, non-consensual dissemination of intimate images, badly known as revenge porn. This Google is already doing it, but not in Latin America, because we have 10 cases that have actually asked to be delisted from Google because of revenge porn, and the process just doesn't go through because it depends solely on Google. So let's go a little bit more here. Always to be delisted, medical data. Credit card information, if your credit cards are just there, just delist them, you know? Why are you even thinking about anything else? Never to be delisted, persons involved in politics, justice, or public life, economic, mental, environmental, or health information. And then the gray areas. We have here artistic and or public nudity. I think that should be delisted after a certain point, because from a feminist perspective, I should have control over my own body, and the images of my body are my body. But we do not agree, so we put it in the gray area. And what we seek here is just actually make a better conversation and have a public debate on these gray areas and how are we going to handle them culturally. Consensual dissemination of one's own image. Do you have a right to delist that after a certain time? Consensual dissemination of intimate images or picture, non-consensual outing of other person's sexuality, so basically gay outing. Should that be delisted or not? There could be a public interest at hand, so we put it over here. Identity of persons who have served in jail, but they just served in jail and then they have a right to be reinserted in society, right? Should that be delisted or not? For me, it's definitely leaning over almost always delisted, but for some people, it's not. And one thing that is super important, especially in Latin America, is innocent people that were put in prison. Because the media logic is asymmetrical. Always, it's always going to be newsworthy when you catch somebody and process them, but it's never going to be newsworthy when these people come out of jail, even though they're innocent and even though there's no charges against them. You're probably wondering, why are they going to jail if they're not innocent? Because we have organized crime, so we have laws that say, oh, prevention jail, please do not let El Chapo Guzman escape again from jail. So just put him over here and then we figure out if he's guilty or not. So this is basically it. I was just trying to make a different approach and talk to you a little bit about the right to identity. I also believe Google, we should definitely have a right to question these algorithms, and we should definitely stop with this absolutist free speech perspective, First Amendment free speech perspective, that also at some point crosses with non-regulation and the invisible hand of Adam Smith that just makes everything perfect. We should regulate, we should delist, and we should have a right to question these algorithms way beyond what is called now the right to be forgotten. So if anybody has any questions, I think we still have a couple of minutes. Yeah. Any questions, comments, whatever pops to your mind? Some of these things Google is doing already, like the non-consensual dissemination of intimate images, but the rest, because it depends solely upon them, we don't really know. This is what I'm proposing as never to be delisted, almost always delisted, and just the gray areas of discussion to have a public debate.
If someone's under investigation but not convicted, because there's some saying presumed innocent until proven guilty, people should be delisted until basically they are proven.
That's a very good debate. Even here, it's interesting because that's what we were thinking about delinking. So it's just delinking the person's name to the information, and then could be used as a precautionary measure. But then also sometimes you have, there's actually cases in Latin America of people that were involved in military dictatorships, and they were delisted. Even though they were proven guilty, and they just asked for delisting a lot of time, like 20 years after. So I would have to say I do not agree on that, because even though you serve jail and you have a right to be reinserted in society, there's 4 cases that we have in Mexico that are related to, in Mexico and in Chile overall, that are related to human rights violations that were delisted. So I think that's a little bit more of a discussion, but it's certainly something that the presumption of innocence should be respected. And if media doesn't respect it, then these people are screwed forever, right? Because they are being indexed like this. Okay. Thank you.
I'm just wondering, from a legal perspective, is this what you're speaking about, the right to identity? Is that applicable to other cases other than Google? I'm thinking perhaps if someone is found not to be guilty of the crime that they were put in jail, like to have their public records erased or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. What I took basically is the definition of the right to identity in the Inter-American Court of Human Rights. But I also did a mapping on how national countries, like each national country, thinks about the right to identity. And a part of that is the cancellation of debts and the reinsertion, the social reinsertion of ex-convicts. So definitely, it's a part. But what I'm thinking about is actually proposing or creating or developing a core right to identity that has to do with our own autonomy. And this is definitely part of the discussion, because then if you committed a crime and then you cannot, you're always judged by your actions in the past. So that limits your autonomy and your ability to create your own personality in the future. So definitely it's part of that, although I would say not the only part of it.
Thanks. I just wanted to ask you for your views on regulation of these organizations that are now holding massive amounts of data, whether you think that they should be regulated, if you've seen any examples of regimes which are being a bit more progressive in regulation.
But in terms of companies, you mean?
So like Google and Facebook are now, they have all data on what I like and what I search for, and with that comes a certain amount of power where there might be a case to be made for regulation. I just wanted to get your views.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's a very good question, because I am very pro-regulation. It has to do with, a leftist perspective on the market and not letting just monopolies exist because the market is perfect and it's going to balance itself. But I also think we should not always end up in liability, because they make these companies liable for third-party content could actually stifle speech. I'm also a free speech activist. I know it here it sounds like I hate free speech, but I come from protest movements. So not necessarily liability, but definitely think about a term of social responsibility. And overall, what I'm pushing at, and I've been writing about also at IETF, is making companies responsible for their algorithms as well. It's not that algorithms are automated processes that are just existing out there, right? It's Google's and Facebook algorithms that are doing this. Therefore, the company has a responsibility to respect human rights. So that is more or less the link I made, rather than economical sanctions for violating rights, because we have seen that with the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. If they get a notification of copyright infringement, they have to take it down, and that has been terrible for free speech. Actually, our presidents have used it to stifle dissident speech. So that's definitely not something we want to go for. But I would definitely say yes to responsibility and yes to making these companies accountable for their own algorithms. Perfect. So if there's no any other question, I think our time is almost up. Thank you very much.